Welcome to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. John Sutter was an emigre from Switzerland who came to California to establish his new Helvetia in the Land of Opportunity, located in what is now close to Sacramento, California. A man with vision and organization and a liking to drink, Sutter built an economically thriving Anglo-American settlement outpost in what was then Mexican California. The economy was based on livestock and lumber and used forced Native American labor. The discovery of gold in 1849 at a mill owned by Sutter started the gold rush that ultimately led to his undoing, ruining him financially as the mass of humanity tramped through the lands he then claimed to own on their way to the gold fields. John Sutter was portrayed by historian David Fenimore as part of Rediscovering California at 150, the California Sesquicentennial Initiative produced by the California Council for the Humanities. I met with John Sutter and David Fenimore in San Francisco in December 1988 and began by asking John Sutter to describe what it was like when he first arrived in Sacramento.
Well, we sailed up the river, myself and my men, on three vessels, and we were bedeviled by mosquitoes, but amazed at the fertility of the flat ground around the river, the broad channel, the deep water. We saw Indian sign. I was used to recognizing Indian sign, for I had grown used to Indians in Missouri. Bunches of white feathers tied in the bushes, offerings to their gods or their devils. We came to a point several miles below the confluence of the Rio de los Americanos, which I later called the American River, when suddenly in a clearing appeared several hundred painted savages. As far as we could interpret their actions, were preparing to fight us. My men, of course, raised their firearms and were ready to shoot, but I told them to hold their fire, and I drew close to the bank and stepped ashore. And counting on the fact that there were probably some former mission Indians among them, I greeted them in my best Spanish, calling out, "Adios, amigos!"
Not knowing necessarily what adios meant at the time.
My Spanish was very poor, as was my English in those days. Well, the effect was they saw we were not of Mexican origin. Well, the Mexicans they had grown to detest, they raided them for cattle, stole horses from them, and were used to fighting off the Mexican punitive expeditions. The Californios were no friend of the Indios. But they saw that we were others. I had actually represented myself earlier as a King George man around the Wind River Rendezvous in Fort Walla Walla, as rather than a Boston man, meaning that I presented myself as a Britisher and not as an American, because the Indians detested Americans but did not mind the British. So in this way I presented myself as what I chose to early in my life, which was a French or a Swiss rather than a Mexican, although I intended to become a Mexican citizen by becoming naturalized and taking up land. But at this point, the Indios did not know this. I gave them beads and bandanas, other trade goods. This was very pleasing to them, mollified them. They later, of course, became my good friends. And I sailed further up the Sacramento River and up the Feather River. But my men began to, if not exactly mutiny, at least act very disgruntled, for they did not want to go so far into the wilderness. So I turned around and went up the American River, and I had myself and my goods and my men, my associates, put ashore on the north bank of the American River, the south bank of the American River, where we founded our new Helvetia.
And that became kind of a compound and a little enterprise.
It began as some grass shacks, built on a wood frame, for I had my Kanakas with me from the Sandwich Islands who knew how to build in this manner. Then we built a small ranch house of adobes, and that's where I spent the winter, with my men. And in the next season, we built larger adobe structures, corrals, blacksmith shop, and the year after that, built a fort with walls many feet thick and towers to mount our cannons.
In the same neighborhood?
In the same area. It was high ground, so it was immune from floods and it was away from the mosquitoes.
How long after that was it that John Marshall came to you with the flaky, shiny metal?
I first came to the Valley of the Sacramento in 1839, and it was January 1848, 9 years later.
Describe that when he came to you. What was his feeling? What was your feeling?
I had by that time a thriving establishment. I had thousands of acres seeded in wheat and barley and other grains, vast herds of horses and cattle, so many I could not count them, and manufacturers of all kinds, hats and barrels and saddles and even guns. And we were packing salmon in barrels and selling it for $20 a barrel down below in San Francisco. When I saw these golden grains in that green glass vial, I had a premonition that the world would greatly interfere with my plans.
What was John Marshall's premonition?
Had none. He was very suspicious. He came in with this vial, and it was raining very hard outside.
Did he know what he was carrying?
He believed he knew, yes, but he wasn't sure. He showed me these grains and immediately said, "Are we alone?" And I said, "Yes." And then he ran up to the door and threw it open, and there was one of my servants standing there. And I chased him away and locked the door and came back and took what he had given me, these grains, and I poured on them a strong solution of aqua regis, a strong acid, and it proved invulnerable to this acid. And I examined it under a glass, and I went and I read the entire section entitled Gold in the Encyclopedia Britannica, and determined, partly using a scale, that it was indeed gold.
Tell me more. Happened then?
I made a melancholy ride to Coloma, which was a little over 30 miles from my fort. We had built a road. And I looked around for myself. I dug in the ground, and with nothing but a penknife, I dug up a lump of gold weighing an ounce and a half. I tried to swear my men to secrecy.
Were others with you when you dug with your penknife that day?
There were some of my men there, yes, and I tried to tell them that it would be a mistake if this news should get out. But the news, of course, did get out. Whiskey and women let it out. Sam Brannan, later that season, rode through the streets of San Francisco, waving a nugget and shouting, "Gold! Gold on the American River!" And that began what we called the gold fever.
What happened to your thriving enterprise as the gold fever rose, the temperature became warmer and warmer?
More and more people came to the area. And these were not sturdy immigrants. These were not farmers. These were the worst kinds of rascals.
What do you mean? What kind of people were they?
Unprincipled people, people with no sense of honor, men who would do a wholesale business in stealing. Men who would just as soon steal what they were not willing to work for. Men who drove off my cattle and killed them for food. Men who pastured their horses in my grain. They say that men will steal anything except millstones and milestones. They stole my millstones.
Out of your mill?
Out of my mill. They stripped the boards from the buildings to use to build fires and to build their own shanties.
What did they do with the millstones?
I don't know. They stole anything that was not fastened and many things that were. My fort lay deserted. I could not keep anyone there. Everyone left me, from the clerk to the cook. Even my Indians left. A few men lingered for a few weeks to finish some jobs, but they too went to the mines. The lure of the gold was too extraordinary. Around California, barbers were putting down their razors. sailors were leaving their ships. Captains were walking away from ships. There were dozens and dozens of three-masted schooners lying abandoned in the harbors at Yerba Buena. No one had ever seen the like.
Did you go? Did the gold fever get John Sutter?
I went and tried my hand at the diggings. I took my Indians, I took wagons and supplies, but I could not make it pay. It was too difficult, too much work, and people were stealing the gold right and left. It was not the kind of work for which I was suited. I think the gold fever was a kind of lottery, where men would take a chance and only one or two out of 100 would get rich. I'm a farmer. I believe in agriculture.
You ran the farms in the fields around the fort as kind of an entrepreneur, selling them, taking the fish live out of the stream, shipping them west to San Francisco.
There was a great business in sending wheat and barley and manufactured items and salted salmon in barrels. A great business sending this down below on my schooner down the Sacramento River, and in trade receiving other necessary goods, ammunition and guns and iron to make plows and locks and bolts and such as that.
Let me take a moment and say that I'm talking with John Sutter about the history of his fort that he built at the confluence of the American River and the Sacramento River. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Mr. Sutter, John, if I may, Captain, if I must, weren't you able to sell all of these goods that you describe to the gold miners, to the people who came to seek their fortune?
For a time, I made a good business selling places to stay. I rented out rooms in my fort. I rented out buildings to be used as stores and storerooms and bar rooms and taverns. And for a while, I did have an income from this. But I had many men working for me who were not the most trustworthy sort. Before the gold fever, I had men who I could trust, like Bidwell and Marshall and Redding. But when the gold fever came, it brought a worse sort of men, white men who I trusted less than I trusted Indians, men like Samuel Kybers, who ran a hotel at the fort and should have made me money, but his bad management and dishonest business practices ended up costing me money.
Were there women there at the time?
There were women. There were settlers around the area of the fort. I had opened my lands up to emigrants, and every
people
year,
who came for something other than gold.
Over the mountains, the men who and women who loved the promise of the soil, as I did, and wished to settle themselves. Of course, when the gold fever came over us, they even abandoned their plows and went to the diggings.
And the Donner Party was one of those groups.
The Donner Party came earlier. That was in 1847 when we first heard news of the Donner Party, and I had heard of it and attempted to guarantee the wages of the rescuers. And in fact, I went myself with cattle and dragged some of these poor, suffering human beings out of the snow.
What was that like? What did you see? How were they?
They were starved and emaciated, and their minds, in some cases, were devastated by what they had seen, by what they had been forced to do. But to these poor unfortunates, I acted like I acted to all emigrants. I had pity on them. I fed them. I clothed them. I provided them with necessary articles at no charge. I allowed them to sleep in the fort. I did my best to make them comfortable, to encourage them and refresh them. And many of them married associates of mine. Many of the survivors became prominent citizens in California.
Captain Sutter, some people say you drank a lot. Some people say you drank too much. Did you like to drink?
I enjoyed a glass of brandy. We established a distillery at the fort, and many of my visitors said they appreciated their first drink of manufactured liquor at my table. I imported a stock of good